Well, hello and welcome to the Smells Like Money podcast. Join me, Suzanne Chin Taylor, the doo-doo diva, as I interview guests who are making an impact on how we manage and operate systems for conveying and treating wastewater. As a veteran of the wastewater, trenchless, and civil infrastructure industry, each week I'll be bringing you industry know-how from industry pros who know how. Join me each week as I speak with representatives of organizations that are utilizing disruptive or new technologies and methods, and executives who are excited to share how to be successful and sustainable in our vital industry. So whether you want to learn about the latest trends in technology, in treatment or trenchless, gain tips on training and retaining great talent, or simply how to be more efficient, productive, or profitable, this podcast is for you. Ready? Let's dive right in. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Doo-Doo Divas Smells Like Money podcast. We are continuing our visit with Kay Girardi, operations at Mehol Contracting. And last time, for those of you who tuned in, we talked about sampling. Now we're moving on to the topic, which I know is near and dear to Kate's heart, which is permit compliance and how these two really tie together. And so thank you for joining us. And Kay, thank you for being willing to continue this conversation.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody. So permit compliance is probably our sweet spot as far as what our company does. So really getting into this is going to be exciting. And I think it's going to, you know, segue well from our last episode in sampling, as a lot of the permit has to do with those sampling results. So I'm excited to get into it. Let's talk.
Dive right in. What are some of those things that, whether you're an industrial plant, you know, the pretreatment or municipal, what are some of the things that people should be thinking about and doing in order to stay in compliance, which of course the main reason is you want to avoid those fines, which cost the bottom line, especially for industrial, that's hitting the profit margin. But for cities, that's, you know, those fines that then are going to impact their ratepayers negatively in their community, and they don't want to have to face that, or they're going to be having less budget to do other things that they really need to do for their plant, but now they had to spend it on fines. So yeah, let's just dive. What are some of the things that they can be looking at?
Yeah, and I'm not really sure how fines work on the municipality sides of things.
Okay.
I'm sure you probably know a little bit more than I would. But as far as the industrial sides of things, let me tell you, it's a big player in the game.
Okay.
In fact, if you get an NOV, which is what I'm going to be referring to all the fines with, is that what they're called in the municipality as well? NOVs, notice of violations?
I believe so.
Yeah, I'm not too sure with what they said with the municipalities, but as far as the industrial side of things getting in there, they're huge players in the game. Let me put it this way. If we have a NOV, which is a fine or notice of violation that can lead to a fine, let's say we had one in April. The way NOVs work is they work on when that NOV happened and when that is found out by. And those fines stack every single day until current date.
Ouch. Which,
yeah, so it's real important for these industrial users to really put a huge emphasis on making sure that they're in compliance. And anybody in the industry that's trying to, you know, really think about this is probably a huge pain point for struggling people, struggling users that are trying to stay compliant. So let's start at the top, you know?
Yeah.
So we get permits from the cities, right? And a lot of them have these, you know, pH neutralizations that they need to get done. I'm not sure how well informed or unless you know about pH neutralization, but this is pretty much the bread and butter of staying compliant. So at some industrial users, they have a requirement to record every 2 minutes. So every 2 minutes, there's going to be a record of what their pH and flow was to the sewers. And it has to be recorded. So there's a range. I believe it's a 5 to 10.5 for Phoenix. And sometimes, you know, it can fluctuate on based on where you're located. Phoenix has a very, very strict, pretty much regulation as far as the pH in their water. I mean, we don't have very much water, so it's pretty
Right.
important. So basically, just get the water that's being discharged within that range is the bread and butter of permit compliance. Okay, so let's break it down back. If that's the bread and butter, then we have to know that the best thing to do is to make sure that our pretreatment is solid. So what does a solid pretreatment look like? That's really the big question here. And really, the maintenance behind it is probably number one, kind of like how we touch in sampling. It seems like the obvious stuff, but the obvious stuff isn't getting done, and that's what causes issues. So testing the sensors, I would say by far one of the most important things that you can do to maintain compliance. A lot of times what we see is when we get in there that are with troubled clients is a lot of their sensors have not been tested in years. And like just like we know how sensors work, a lot of them end up fluctuating or going away from where they should be in the first place. So what we do is we get in there, we test all the sensors, and then we notice whatever ones are not working based on what our manual readings are reading, we replace it. And this seems to pretty much clear up a lot of the troubles with the pretreatment, but it's super important that these sensors are working correctly because it's what tells the system, the pretreatment system, how to neutralize.
Okay.
And now, do you know kind of know how neutralization works? Have you guys talked about that a little about the
No,
product
we've never
or
talked
process?
about that.
Okay.
So give us
All
neutralization 101 here, Kate.
right, here's 101. So essentially the plant brings in dirty water, right, into their pretreatment system. It comes in by a lift station, and lift station goes into the storage tank, and then from the storage tank goes into this treatment system. Basically, a treatment system is like a holding tank that pretty much injects two chemicals, a caustic and an acid, which is, a low pH or a high pH. Now, with industrial users, it's very common for them to use raw water. And then after they use that raw water, it comes in at a higher pH or a lower pH based on whatever product they're making. Okay. So, for example, let's say they're making baby formula, just throwing it out there, baby formula. That's going to, during the process of them making it, it's going to lower what their pH or their water is. So when it comes into that pretreatment system, essentially, there's going to be a sensor that measures that water. Okay. What's that pH looking like? And when it's lower than 5, which is the city limit, it's going to say, hey, system, we need to add caustic, which is going to raise the pH. Okay. So then it raises the pH, and once it gets to that sweet spot, we'll say 6, 7 pH, then it dumps out into the city, which is where the municipality picks it up from there. Now, that whole system that we just talked about, that's pH neutralization. And when just vice versa, if the raw water were to be higher than 10.5, say 12 pH, 13 pH, we'd use acid to bring it down, get down to the sweet spot, 6 or 7, and then dump it out. But this whole system in itself needs to be maintained, needs to be well kept, the sensors need to be tested. And like I said, is the bread and butter of, staying compliant. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
Cool. And when we tie it back to the sampling that we did, when we go back to the permits, and when we take a look at the permits and what it calls for, we get these things called SMRs, which are standard monitoring reports. And essentially, that's where the sampling results go on, but that's also where we put our permit results in. So those 2-minute readings that we get, the flow readings that we get, they all get put into a giant table that basically tells the city how much every single day has been discharged, what the average pH was, what the low pH was, and what the high pH was. And if any of the pHs are out of the range from 5 to 10.5, then you're going to get an NOV, you're fine. So, like I said, maintaining that pretreatment system, which is what controls the pH, is going to save you money in the long run because a non-well kept pretreatment system is going to rack up fines.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now what when you say a pretreatment system, it just injects things. So it's, you know, I'm more familiar with, you know, treatment, obviously, on the municipal side, which is different than industrial side. What are some of the components that are in there that could contribute to it going out of compliance? Other than the maintenance, are there other factors that could come into play, you know, environmental, weather, you know, are these things usually inside a building or can they be outside a building? Can, you know, external forces be at play here?
Yeah. And, you know, let's touch on that because you know what? Not all industrial users have pretreatment systems. There's a lot of them that don't.
Okay.
A lot of them just discharge. So it depends on what your permit calls for. And like how we touched on last podcast, a lot of those permits are derived from the initial sampling, the testing that's being done. So, you know, if you're not sampling correctly, you know, that could affect on how your permit's going to be written and then affect on whether or not, you know, what do you need? You know, what exactly do you need? But going back to the main point. So not all people, all industrial users have treatment systems.
Okay.
And I'd actually say maybe it's probably more common that they don't. So here's the big part. So we all know, you know, fog, right? Fats, odobreezes, they play a big role into everything.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
yes. That's one of the buzzwords, you know, in this industry, you know. So with those fog, the FOGs, when the raw water comes out of the system, or excuse me, out of the industrial user, okay, and then goes into the sewer, that's typically just a direct, you know, it goes right into the sewer. What is called for by the cities are weekly pH sampling and testing, basically. So you go out to the compliance point where there's probably an open pipe or a flume, you get a grab sample or, you know, you get a sample somehow, and then you test it with a pH, a handheld pH meter, right? Then you record that to the city to see whether or not it's in range. Now that goes south a lot of times, and I'm going to tell you why. And I think this is the big point, is when people aren't taking care of everything before it goes out to the city, then it will affect that pH, which will rack up the fine. So when we're talking about fog, a lot of times what happens is it comes out of the plant into a grease trap. Maybe it's a bunch of maybe three chamber grease trap. The grease actually clears out the FOGs, but it actually drops the pH. So when it's not, it's kind of like a catch 22, you know. Okay, you win with the FOG, right? You get those out, which is awesome. That's really probably, you know, really what the municipalities are looking for most. But then it also drops your pH and then puts you in violation. So if for the audience out there, I really think that this is something people don't think to do, but I think would be very much worth your benefit. Or if you're looking at getting in the industry, this would be a great way to get in. But pumping out the grease traps and keeping a well-maintained grease trap is extremely important, because not only will it catch the FOGs, but it will help your pH as well, which will reduce your fines. So if you're wondering, man, how do I get into this industry? You know, coordinating up with some pump companies or becoming a pump company or maybe getting a pump truck is an excellent way entry into the industry, because all of the industrial users, 9 times out of 10, have those grease traps, and 9 times out of 10 aren't maintaining them.
Wow. Because I know, you know, with restaurants, they have to do that.
Right.
You know, because they get a fine. And if anybody, I'm sure there are people out there listening, there was one spot in the town where I used to live where they were doing, you know, food preparation, and you could tell exactly when it was coming time for them to clean out that grease trap. They should be walking by on the sidewalk, and the smell was enough to just knock you back flat.
Yeah, right.
And you think it's a sewer overflow. It's like, no, that's not anybody who's been around. Sewer has a very, very distinct smell. And it's like, no, that's grease trap.
Yeah. And, you know, now that you say that, you bring up a really good point. It's kind of like even these restaurants, they're pretty much on a lower, smaller scale, the same thing as somebody that's producing a good at a mass scale, you know, a significant user. And same for the people, audience that's listening. If you're not really interested in getting in the industrial side, there's a huge gap for these small businesses and restaurants that need those grease traps well maintained, because that will get them in trouble. What you just explained to me is, you know, overfilling grease traps and smelling grease traps.
People complain. Yeah, there you go. Smells like money to me. So, any other ways that, you know, because we know that when industries are discharging the sewer, it's kind of like on a metering of how many gallons are coming down. Are there other places where they can save money by just changing up a few things that you're aware of that's kind of related along this vein that can, you know, help them?
Yes. And I'm glad you asked this, because I think this is an excellent opportunity again for people that are listening, because this is a new section in the industry that I think can be explored and definitely needs help on.
What is that?
Oh, reusing water and wastewater. So I see there's actually plants in the valley that are trying to learn how to do this properly. Like I think the Nestle plant out in like Waddell area, way out in Peoria. They're investigating this. It seems like nobody's really got it down like perfect, but man, if once this gets figured out, it is going to be huge. And what basically this looks like is having an almost their own treat facility in-house, reusing the water that I just mentioned, the raw water that comes in, and then they, you know, they balance it. That only does so much. I'm talking taking everything out of it, you know, and then getting to the grade that you can reuse it for things such as, you know, your irrigation systems, you know, just different various uses that you can use that water in the facility. That is going to be the biggest moneymaker. I'd say the next million-dollar industry that is going to be within our industry right now. And I think it's very new and worth exploring, because once that code is cracked, it's going to be huge, you know.
Well, that is a perfect ending point on this, unless there's something else to share, because next up, we were going to talk about where you see the industry going, opportunities now in light of all these new PFAS regulations and other things that are coming down the pike, innovations that are going to save money, but could also be huge profit centers that could be what we would consider game changers. And also touching on that industry as a whole needs to not fear making these changes and looking for or trying these new innovations, and not be complacent and saying, okay, well, what we're doing is good enough. It's okay. It's stable. I'm afraid to change up something. And there's ways to kind of go about testing the waters on something new without losing what you already have that you know is stable, but making those steps to move in a different direction that, like you were just touching on, this could be the next big thing that, one, could seriously impact an industry's bottom line on their operational and their treatment costs. And also, make, you know, a greener footprint. If we're able to repurpose and reuse, we're just helping the planet. You know, as two people that live in a drought-ridden state, you know, Arizona, we're very concerned about water, but there's lots of places around the country that are concerned about water and around the world. And so on that note, I'm going to leave it there so that we can continue our conversation in the next episode. But if people want to find out more about what Kate and his team at Mehul Contracting do, they can learn more at online at mehulcontracting.com, and that is spelled M-E-H-A-L-L. Contracting, contracting.com. And also look Kate up on LinkedIn and connect and continue the dialogue. And so Kate, thank you for sharing these tips. And again, you were talking about it's sharing the obvious, but I think sometimes we lose sight of the obvious because it becomes some, you know, second nature to most of us. And that could be one of the spots that could really be saving us a lot of money and a lot of headache. And so thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to continuing the dialogue. And for those of you listening, thanks for tuning in. And until next time, keep it flowing.
Thanks so much for joining me, the Doo-Doo Diva, on this week's episode of Smells Like Money. What stood out to you this week? Share your takeaways by leaving me a review. You can find out more about the new technologies, creating sustainable solutions and insights on how to succeed in our vital industry by subscribing to the show. Whether you want to learn about the latest trends in wastewater infrastructure, treatment, or trenchless, you've got it all right here at Smells Like Money. If you're an industry expert and would like to be considered as a guest for the show, book a quick chat with me by visiting calendly.com/thetuitgroup/B-A-podcast-guest, or simply click the link in the show notes below. Until next week, a big shout out to all my industry friends and those who will be. You are my superheroes. Thanks for tuning in, keeping it flowing, and we'll see you all next week.